All right. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Mercules. Welcome to the Massive Breakdown Podcast. This is episode 11. It is Tuesday, September the 20th, and that means today Rise of Iron came out. We are going to not hold you for too long today. We know everybody wants to get back to playing. So I just got to say, I'm here with my two co-hosts, Kit Kutcha and Kay Cougar. How is your Rise of Iron day going?
Well, so I have played the first mission, and that is it. I was up at launch, and I played some Rocket League, and I played some Tricky Towers, and I watched a loading screen for a couple hours, and I finally managed to get in. I'm sure a lot of people know my pain. We played the DMV game. Except they take your number and kick you to the back of the line. So that was pretty crazy. Finally got in though. Can't be after playing that first mission. I can't be salty about it. I can't be upset. That was so good. It was better even than I thought it was going to be. So I watched a preview. So it was still better. So I'm happy.
Yeah, and just so you guys know, we are not going to be discussing spoilers today, so you don't have to worry about us accidentally letting... Well, you do have to worry about us accidentally letting something slip, but if we do, I will edit it out in post-production. But you guys don't have to worry about us spoiling anything for you. We are not going to be talking about any of the story or quest or anything like that, so... But I do have to say, not spoiling it, that it has been awesome so far. I played all the way through the storyline, and it was fantastic. It was definitely my favorite... Definitely my favorite story of the DLC so far, and I love the Plague Lands too. I love the new location. Basically, it feels the most different of anything that we've ever had so far. So, Cougar, how was your Rise of Iron day?
Started out much the same as Kit Kutcha's. It was pretty interesting to see that there were at least 335,000 people at launch waiting to play. That was nice to see. I did get quite a bit more time than Kit did. I ran through the story. We won't talk about that. Got a lot of time in the Crucible, and I definitely have some interesting things to talk about in the Crucible. We've got a lot of base year one guns, vanilla guns coming back. Really happy to see those. And I guess we'll get into it once we start the podcast in full.
Yep, and I spent basically all day today making sure that the weapon stat spreadsheet was as up to date as it could be. There's still some blanks in there if you go and look at it online. There's some blanks that I haven't quite filled in yet. But I've spent basically the entire day double and triple checking everything, making sure it all looks good. So if you guys are wondering about any of the new weapons stats wise and things like that, and you want to go look for yourselves, the weapon stat spreadsheet should be up to date. So we'll probably throw a link to that in the description, and I'll post it on Reddit tomorrow when I get finished with it, but that's just for y'all. So what do we want to do first? We want to do the question and answer?
Yeah, let's jump into some Q&A. So we've been talking about this for a couple of weeks. With so much new stuff, so much stuff that we really have not had a chance to get a handle on yet, this seemed like a good time to take a look back over some of the questions that you guys have sent to us. So I've got these... some of the questions we're going to talk about collected up here. First up, a question that I don't know if we really have a good answer to, or if anyone has a good answer to. From Yoina on Twitter, what does Rodeo do? And I mean, my best answer is something, but based on the description or the name, it seems like it's supposed to make it easier for you to handle the recoil. What are you guys' thoughts on that?
Well, in my testing, it doesn't do anything to the recoil pattern when you don't touch the stick. Nothing at all. It doesn't change the amount of vertical jump. It doesn't change the spacing between the bullets. It doesn't change anything at all, period. So my hypothesis is that it actually makes it require less pressure on the right thumbstick to control the recoil. It basically just doesn't require you to push down as much to keep the gun from going up. That's just a hypothesis. I don't know that for sure. That's a really difficult thing to test. But the honest truth is, when I've played with Rodeo and without it, I've never noticed that I have it, and I've never noticed that I don't have it. So if there is an effect, and I'm sure there is some effect, I think it's minimal at best. And that's what I think about it.
Cougar, anything to add?
No, that's what Mercules was talking about is the usual theory that I see for rodeo. I don't really have anything I can add to that.
Okay. All right, well, guys, there you have it. So, difficult one to test. Now, I have another question from Twitter from I Had Gallarhorn. Will Thorn get a PvE buff? I think we can pretty conclusively say the answer to that one is no.
Thorn already got a PvE buff, I believe, between House of Wolves and the Taken King.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
They're not really going to change that. Doesn't get any use.
If you look at like the way Bungie designs their weapons, guns aren't generally good in PvE and PvP. They're generally kind of one or the other. And Thorn is good in PvP. It's not, and even if you look at the lore and the backstory, not that it matters, but it's a gun that's made to kill other guardians. It's not really something that's supposed to be taken into a raid or taken into a crucible and used there. So to answer the question, long story short, no, I doubt it gets a PvE buff. I can't really see that happening.
So now I've got one from somebody that some of our listeners might be familiar with. I certainly am a fan. Handsome Dragon asks, how have I never heard of this podcast? And honestly, I've got no idea, man. I'm shocked.
I think it's because we don't advertise well enough. I've only got like 100 followers on Twitter. And I tweet these episodes out weekly, but it doesn't seem like they get too much attention. Planet Destiny has been helping us out a little bit with that. The good people over at Crucible Playbook have been very good with their feedback the last couple of weeks. And Destiny the game seems to always enjoy them, but I've tried posting them over on the Bungie forums, and it's hit or miss. Sometimes it seems to go over really well, and sometimes it disappears into the abyss, and no one ever sees it. Yeah. So, I think it's just slowly and steadily more and more people are hearing about it, and hopefully sometime soon we'll be one of those mainstay podcasts in the Destiny community. At least, fingers crossed. That's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping works out.
Yeah, if people find value in it, you know, I know they'll find us. So, just got to keep doing our best to put that good info out there.
Yep.
All right, enough patting ourselves on the butt. Deathray Dino asks, sidearms, which is best? Now, a couple of weeks ago, I would have said Queen's Choice, right, but that is not true anymore.
I'm going to take this one. Currently, with the information I have, I don't know a whole bunch about the new Rise of Iron sidearms. What I do know is that Crow's Eye has the capability to get a body shot time to kill of 0.7 seconds as long as you have Field Choke, Linear Compensator, or Accurized Ballistics, something that buffs your impact. You will be able to get a 4 body shot kill with a 0.7 second time to kill. It is hit scan.
Nasty.
That really, it's as good as it gets.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Crow's Eye is definitely the best at this point in time, as long as, like Cougar said, you have an impact increasing perk. Not aggressive ballistics, because that perk destroys the rest of the gun, but linear comp, field choke, accurized ballistics, any of those will make it to where it's 4 shots to the head, 4 shots to the body. You're still going to kill them in the same amount of time. The other ones, I guess they're the mid-rate of fire. They still have a faster crit time to kill, but let's be honest, I don't know a point in time where you're ever going to hit 4 critical shots in a row with any of the sidearms. So I think Crow's Eye is definitely the best right now. Again, like you said, we don't know about the new ones though. The new ones have been hard to test. So
especially trying to hit the max rate of fire.
Yeah, it's hard enough to hit that rate of fire on the existing hand cannons. The existing sidearms. I was pretty surprised when they said, oh, we're going to make some faster rate of fire sidearms. I really expected them to be full auto almost, like just by default. Like I was kind of wondering if that was going to be the new thing, full auto sidearms. But no, we just have to pull the trigger. So
yeah, because you're getting to the point where it's really difficult to pull the trigger that fast. Like when you start coming down to, you know, 5 frames in between shots, it is difficult to maintain that over an extended period of time. So it doesn't even really matter what their, you know, optimal time to kill is, because you're never going to hit that. Like you're never going to be able to pull the trigger that fast. You're going to overcycle at some point and pull the trigger too soon or too late. And you know, I don't really see the point of them either, but they seem really dead set on trying to make sidearms a thing in Rise of Iron. So we'll see how it works out. And I'm doing the testing as quickly as I can, but it's taking a little while.
Well, hopefully they'll surprise us. So moving on, I've got a interesting one here from TS Robertson 908 on Twitter. Is there any damage over time in current PvE aside from the wizard poison clouds that we are all so unfortunately familiar with? So I came up with a couple. I know we've got Skolas's, boy, I can't say that quite right. Anyway, Devouring Essence, the effect that you get when you're fighting Skolas in the final original Prison of Elders battle, is a damage over time effect in current PvE. Along those same lines, Urox, the Flame Prince, also inflicts damage over time with his fire effect. Obviously, you can't avoid that, but there it is. Kind of along the same lines of Urox, we've got the Taken Knights shooting that fire spray that can either be super annoying or completely ignored, depending on how lucky you are and how well positioned you are. So there's another dot effect. And then I've seen some fallen traps in some of the reveal footage for Rise of Iron, but I've not encountered them yet. And that's about all that I was able to come up with. What do you guys think? Any other damage over time effects in PvE?
I can't really think of any. PvE is not really my specialty, so I don't know. I can't think of any more than what you listed.
Yeah, I think I got the vast majority. There might be some other one-off effects out there, specific strike bosses, specific enemies, but as far as general PvE, there's not a lot of it. I kind of feel like this question might have been triggered by the artifact, the Iron Lord's artifact that blocks or greatly reduces damage over time effects, and I just want to make a note, at least as far as the language I saw in the artifact, it looks like that's a Crucible-only effect, so not going to help us out there in the world.
Yep. Is that one of the artifacts that y'all picked up today? I went with, I think it's Jolder's is the one that removes the sprint lock. That's what I went with.
I'll be picking one up today, but it will be the damage over time one. It's the only intellect discipline that they have.
That's true. The strength one totally screwed my build up as a hunter. It was awful.
And I think the intellect discipline artifacts can still get much higher stat totals.
Yeah, they still got the 13 higher points total.
Yeah, unfortunately, I've not been able to get to selecting one yet here, so I'm not quite sure what I'm going to go with, but...
The damage over time one is intellect discipline this week.
And then the other options are the one that changes the minions to your side and the one that removes the sprint lock.
Yeah, sprint lock's pretty tempting for me, so we'll see. We'll see. I'll have to think about it. One other... Well, let's jump down to another one. Let's see. We had somebody ask about sweaty matches. We already addressed that, so we're going to go ahead and skip that one. A couple other questions we'll skip here because we've already answered them in other episodes. So here's one for you guys. This is a great question from Supertalent82. Which year 3 hand cannon will reign supreme, or will year 2 hand cannons stay on top? Is it going to continue to be the year of the Aes Luna guys, or do we have some new contenders?
I don't think Aes Luna is going to stay on top. Aes Luna has a couple of huge, huge drawbacks to it. And the reason people love it is because the range and stability at base are really very high. It's got a decent mag size of 10, but the aim assist and the recoil direction are atrocious. It's got 50 aim assist, which is bad, yeah, obviously. And it's got 60 recoil direction, which is really, really bad. That's, I think, 20 less than the next closest legendary hand cannon. The next closest legendary hand cannon in terms of worst recoil direction. They're all at 80 or higher, basically. Yeah. So the fact that it has 60 is just, it's abysmal. And I think we're actually going to have a couple of contenders to take its place. One of the ones I think is going to do it is the Palindrome, which is the Crucible Quartermaster. Just the stock vendor roll. It comes with very great base range of 39. Comes with a great set of sights. The base stability is 39. And the recoil direction is 94, so much, much better than the Aes Luna. The base aim assist is 70, much, much better than the Aes Luna. Really, the only place it loses to the Aes Luna is the base stability isn't as great by a couple points, and the equip speed is a little bit lower. But it's easier to get a god roll, and the difference in aim assist and the difference in recoil direction are huge. So I think that one's probably gonna take over.
I want to throw a dark horse out there. We don't usually see the maximum impact hand cannons on these sort of lists, but I do want to throw out the Year 3, formerly Year 1, Ill Will. It is a maximum impact hand cannon, 94 impact. It has the highest base range in the game at 50. The stability sucks at 12, but your ideal build takes care of that anyway. It's got terrible reload speed. You want some gauntlets with it. The base magazine size is 7. The recoil direction is 90. The aim assist is a little lacking at 50. But what you're looking for with the Ill Will is a very specific role. This role is Luck in the Chamber and Braced Frame. That bumps your stability up to very, very nice levels. I want to say 49. I was just looking at it. Let's see, it bumps your stability up to 53, actually.
Wow.
With the Sure Shot Irons. Your magazine size will be dropped to 5, and that leaves you with a 40% chance to get a 2-headshot kill. So keep an eye out for it. The Ill Will with the correct roll can be a very, very powerful hand cannon.
Yeah, I love the Ill Will, and I've talked about it on the podcast before, but I loved it back in Year 1, I guess, or
the Baby Hawk Moon.
Yeah, where you could get it with Braced Frame, Luck in the Chamber, Final Round. And, I mean, Final Round and Luck in the Chamber combined, you had 5 shots. You were basically, you know, 2 out of your 5 were going to do like 120 damage to someone, basically. It was fantastic. So I miss those days. You can't get it with Final Round anymore, sadly, but the Luck in the Chamber Brace Frame roll is still very, very good on it.
Yep, and you can roll Rangefinder in that first slot. So you could have Rangefinder, Brace Frame, Luck in the Chamber for a very good all-around roll.
Nice.
And even if you don't get Rangefinder, who cares? It has 50 base range. So.
Yeah.
It's set already.
Yeah, wow. That's crazy. Man, let's see. Do we have any other questions here we got to address? Got 2 more, I think, that we can address. Then we should probably get moving on into some Rise of Iron talk. So we don't talk people's ears off when they want to be playing the game. Of course, we know they just paused the podcast, but
yeah. But we want to be playing the game too, so we can't talk our own ears off.
I know. I need to go get in there. Okay, 2 more questions here. One, had a question. This one from the subreddit username 50xjbd. Asking about the digital upgrade path and how that works with legacy console imports. So there were a lot of questions about that. Bungie actually has a really good series of help articles on that I probably want to point people to in the show notes later. But basically there was a question about, does that expire? Can legacy consoles import indefinitely, or is there a time limit? And the answer is basically that they can import indefinitely. Bungie's not going to say, oh, you can't bring your character forward. But your progress is going to be lost past a certain point, I think, like now-ish. Or very soon that progress is going to be lost. And then there's digital upgrade path they're providing, I think, offers some discounts to players who've purchased the game on PS3 or Xbox 360. And that is not going to be available past January 31st. So if that's something that you are thinking about doing, if you're you know, on one of those legacy consoles and you want to move forward, you want to get into Rise of Iron, I would not wait past Christmas. You know, make it a Christmas present to yourself. You know, because it is there is a time limit there. You're gonna probably lose out on a good deal. Fortunately, I think we're all on current gen already, so not something we've had to really go through ourselves. But
nope, I made the jump to Xbox One a long time ago, so probably the wrong console considering what Destiny's exclusives are all for. But still, at least I'm current gen.
Yeah. Hey, I think you guys can get a Hawk Moon at least, right? So that's That's something.
True. Just in time since they killed it. It's no longer the dominant Hawk Moon it once was, but at least we have it now.
Yeah, you win some, you lose some. Or I guess Xbox kind of loses all of them right now. But anyway, moving on.
You'll never know the joy of one-shotting somebody with a Hawk Moon.
You'll never know the joy of being one-shot by Hawk Moon, is what you mean.
That's also true, though.
So anyway, we've got one last question here. Not going to answer this one because we're not going to spoil things. I had Gallarhorn on Twitter, wrote in with another question asking where to find iron medallions. You probably have already seen some of the guides out there. I know there are a bunch. I'll be working on one as well. We're going to link a guide in the show notes. So just keep an eye down there if that's something that you're looking for, and we'll point you to a good guide that's going to, you know, get you everything you need to get on that path. And that is all I have. We are out of time for listener questions for today. Thank you so much to everyone who submitted them and to everyone who listens and talks to us on Twitter, on Reddit about the podcast. You guys made this a ton of fun so far, and I'm really looking forward to where we're going to go with year three.
Appreciate the questions, guys.
Okay.
All right. Moving on to Rise of Iron, the thing we're all excited about that we made our listeners sit through about 20 minutes to get to the important stuff. So what do we want to talk about? I've got some things I want to talk about. I want to talk about some of the vendor weapons that have caught my eye. I'm just going to list a few of them. We're not going to talk about too many. I already spoke of the Palindrome, which is a really cool one. And there's, you know, quite a few other vendor weapons out there that I think are very, very good that should definitely be picked up. The one I picked up first, actually, it was the Event Horizon, the new very high-impact sniper rifle from the Crucible vendor. It's actually got a really great roll on it. You can get small bore, which does not affect the mag size at all. It stays at 3. It's already as small as it's going to go. It has hidden hand. It has short gaze. And you can choose either Spray and Pray or Grenadier. I was running with Grenadier at first because I always like to get grenades. But the fact of the matter is, with only 3 rounds in the magazine, you actually run out pretty quickly. So I'm thinking I'm going to move over to Spray and Pray. Do you guys have any vendor weapons? What was the first thing y'all picked up, or the first thing that caught y'all's eye?
I'd have to say the new Monarchy auto rifle. I haven't picked it up. I haven't picked up any vendor weapons, but the new Monarchy auto rifle definitely caught my interest. It is a 102 archetype, same as the Doctrine of Passing. Has counterbalance, perfect balance, and I forgot what the first perk was.
It is quick draw, yeah, or armor piercing rounds, either one of the two. But I guess armor piercing rounds gives you a range bonus now too. I forget about that.
It does.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, I forgot that too. Wow.
All in all, pretty good roll.
Yeah, that's some good options. Yeah.
It's the first time we've had a vendor 102 auto rifle sold with perfect balance and counterbalance, at least as far as I know.
That almost feels designed. Like I've always kind of wondered if the vendor rolls are random or if they're picked in some way.
No, they're picked. Didn't the guy stop by Reddit the other day, the guy who picks all of Lord Saladin's rolls when the Iron Banner comes? And I think they have an entire team. I think Arms Day rolls are random.
Yeah, well, Arms Day's random.
But I think they have a team of players that pick the rolls for the vendors. Yeah, because he said they have a goal. They want the rolls to be good enough to convince people to pursue them, but not so good that you can't get a better roll somewhere else.
That's a good philosophy. I like that.
Mm-hmm. It's cool.
So I think the first one that caught my eye was probably that Crucible sniper rifle. To be honest, that's where I started scrolling through the vendor weapons, and that thing is just a really solid roll. I mean, it's conceivable you could get something better. Small bore is maybe not the ideal perk in that slot, but I mean, you can't complain. You know, if I got that roll, I would be overjoyed. And I'm going to get that roll now, so that's, you know, got to be happy about it. The one other thing that kind of caught my eye, I'm a big hand cannon fan, and I really love explosive rounds on hand cannons. It's just so much fun for me. And I saw Free Will Ill, which is kind of a fun play on Ill Will. It's the opposite archetype, the high rate of fire, but it drops with explosive rounds, rifled barrel, and range finder, which makes it about as effective at a distance as any high rate of fire hand cannon can be. So you've got, obviously, rifle barrel pushing out that range, rangefinder giving you that increased zoom, better recoil, and then explosive rounds. Just, you know, for anyone who forgot, that explosion does not have damage drop-off, so that's roughly a third of your damage that does not experience any drop-off due to range, plus that lovely screen flash and flinch that it inflicts on everyone that you shoot. Just going to be a ton of fun. I'm looking forward to playing around with that one.
Yeah, it's one of the few low-impact hand cannons that probably can compete. It doesn't have a high base range. It's only 20. But like you said, explosive rounds is what makes it. You're going to hope that part of your damage isn't falling off, and you're going to hope that when you're hitting someone with explosive rounds, they're not going to be able to hit you back, basically. But I actually thought it was the Free Will 3.
Oh, maybe it is.
Isn't that
maybe
what it is?
Maybe it's Free Will
yeah.
3.
Because it's because New Monarchy always has numbers at the end of the all there. Yeah, so
the Free Will 3. I've been up since 3:30 a.m., so, and it's now 10 p.m., so I might be slipping.
That's all good. And I think there's another vendor weapon that's got a lot of people's attention, and it's the shotgun from Dead Orbit.
Can't pass that one by.
Yeah, I think that shotgun has a lot of people switching to Dead Orbit and trying to pick it up. I myself picked one up and then promptly accidentally deleted it when I was trying to delete other stuff to get my legendary marks back, which was very painful, I can tell you. So I have to now save up enough marks to make up for the 147 I wasted buying that one. But it's called the Last Ditch 001. Has a really, really high base range of 23. And if you get one to drop with a random roll and you have aggressive ballistics, it's one of only a few shotguns in the game that can actually hit the range cap with aggressive ballistics, because aggressive ballistics gives you a range penalty. But it also boosts your damage per pellet up by 2. So if you get rifle to reinforced barrel and aggressive ballistics and rangefinder, congratulations, you have a perfect shotgun, basically. You're going to be doing 24 damage per pellet out to the farthest possible range. And the vendor roll isn't that good, unfortunately. But it does have hammer forged. It does have rangefinder. It's also got quick draw, which is really cool to have on a shotgun that's normally pretty slow. The equip speed on that is not very fast. And then it's got CQB ballistics, which is just, yeah, meh, but whatever. Still, it's a very, very good roll on a very, very good archetype of shotgun.
Yeah, absolutely. Let you in on a little something I did. I was working on my vendor artifacts for my hunter. That's my main, of course. The only class worth playing as a main, as everyone knows. And I got New Monarchy and Future Warcold done. Future Warcold because that's my real loyalty, and then New Monarchy just because I really liked a lot of their weapons in the Taken King. And I was all set to start doing Dead Orbit, but then they announced Rise of Iron. And I was like, well, you know, I can wait. I can wait a little bit here and just save up everything I would have been pumping into Dead Orbit and then go and get, you know, 15, 20... rank ups that first week, and that's going to be a ton of stuff. And of course, then they announced that shotgun, and now I'm just super happy because I'm just a total shotgun. Can we say shotgun whore? Do we censor ourselves that much? I'm a shotgun whore. That's if you look at like my warlock, and please don't look at my stats, but if you do, the majority of my kills are from shotguns.
To jump in real quick concerning the Last Ditch, you're not going to be able to get rifled or reinforced barrel. You actually have to look for both hand-loaded and hammer-forged to hit that max range.
Oh, there you go. I didn't actually know that it couldn't roll with rifled or reinforced. Is it not available in the perk pool at all? Or is
not
it
at all.
Does it roll in a... Well, that is unfortunate then. That makes it a little bit more difficult to get a perfect roll on it.
Yes, you have to have both of those.
That's probably for the best, honestly. I mean, shotguns are already prevalent enough. There are a lot of really good shotgun rolls out there already. I can't, even though, as much as I love shotguns, I can't be mad about them not making it too easy for us to get a good roll.
Yep, so moral of the story, it does not roll with rifled barrel or reinforced barrel at all. Range perks, you got small bore, you got hammer forged, and you got hand loaded, and that is it. So you're definitely right on that, Kugra, and I will actually use that in my weapons recommendations and make note of that.
Yeah, that's fantastic info.
I actually saw somebody else mention it today because I would have I would have expected that to have rifle to reinforce. Not that I've ever seen a shot.
Yeah, that's kind of weird, really. But
well, I guess I don't want a repeat of the Matador meta where it was just brutal in the Crucible.
Probably. We think of it as a long time ago, but it really was not a long time ago.
Well, Rise of Iron is all about nostalgia, isn't it? So they're bringing us back to the shotgun dominated meta. Nerf snipers and make sure primaries are weak and sell a bunch of really high impact shotguns, and there you go. It's easy as pie. Oh, and bring Thorn back too. So it's we're almost back at the House of Wolves meta. We're a lot slower, but it's like the poor man's house.
Well, they just gave my Voidwalker his blink back, and they just gave him his Matador back. So, I mean, I'm about as happy as can be in the Crucible. But I think a lot of other people are going to be mad, or at least maybe a little bit of salt about the shotguns, but we'll adapt. We'll have fun.
As they say, get good, right? That's all you can do with it.
Got to play the game.
For instance, I played Supremacy for the first time.
How was that?
Today. And I went in with a sniper rifle and a scout rifle, and that lasted exactly one game. And I switched to Soul Stealer's Claw and the Vacancy, and then I ended up switching to Hand Cannon, a Lord High Fixer with Luck in the Chamber and the Vacancy, and that worked out a lot better. So it is definitely a different game type than anything we've been used to. It really promotes the close quarters combat a lot more, and it's kind of funny on a map like Frontier. You'll kill someone with a sniper from far away because it's a long range map, and that crest will just sit there and like beckon to you, but you know you can't go get it because it's all the way on the other side of the map. So you're kind of just like, well, is it worth running over there and possibly trading or getting killed? And it makes for some really, really fun gameplay. I was actually really enjoying it, honestly. But it's definitely different than Rift or Control or any of the other 6v6 modes that are out there right now.
That's awesome. I have not had a chance to dive into Supremacy, which is disappointing. It's just, you know, just obviously it's how my day worked out, but I'm really looking forward to it. It's good to hear that it's living up to the hype.
Yeah, it's a very close quarters oriented game type, as Mercules noted. Since you've got to pick up whatever you kill, I'd say 90% of the kills that I saw in Supremacy matches were with either auto rifles, hand cannons, shotguns, or fusions. Not a lot of scout rifle or sniper rifle use. You know, most of the time, people using those are losing the points that they could have gained. So, overall, it's a very, very close range game mode.
Yeah, unless you're playing with a really coordinated team where you have people who are pressing forward and someone with a sniper or scout rifle is hanging back with the purpose of providing support. Unless you're playing like that, like if you're just playing with a bunch of blueberries and you're sniping, you're not doing anything, really. Even if you get a kill, it doesn't matter. You're not picking up the crest, you're not helping. So it's definitely a game type that will probably develop its own little meta inside of the playlist just because of the type of gameplay that it tries to push on you. And as someone who usually likes long range gameplay, I actually thought it was pretty fun. I don't know why, but there's this like twinge of rage every time one of my teammates picks up one of my crests now. I know that they're supposed to do it, and I know that it helps my team, but like I'll kill someone and I'll be running towards the crest and someone will just like swoop in and take it and run away. I'm like, come on, like I was right there. I was going to get that.
Wait till that happens. Wait till that happens while you're trying to do the Shaxx fall.
So what was it? It was the MLG tournament went on last week, didn't it? Have we talked about that at all? Did you guys get a chance to watch that stream?
I did, actually.
I did not.
What'd you think of it?
You know, I really enjoyed it. That was my lunch break that day, watching that stream, and it was just a ton of fun to watch some really good players, you know, getting in there and trying kind of, you know, a relatively new game. But they got to practice ahead of time, of course. But it was a lot of fun. It also really showcased how unpredictable things can be. By all reports, they were pretty evenly matched in their practice games ahead of time. But I'm hoping I'm remembering Alpha and Bravo correctly here, but I believe it was Alpha just came in and just swept the games when it counted. I think they lost one match and were just really very dominant, really showcased how team gameplay, chaining supers, backing each other up and staying grouped makes a huge difference in a game like that where you're needing to complete those objectives in order to actually win. You know, you'll see games of control sometimes where you can, you know, maybe not always be playing the objectives perfectly as a team and still come out ahead, even, you know, just by pure Slayer skill. And that is not something you can really get away with in Supremacy. From the gameplay I saw from these guys, really looked like playing as a team mattered a lot more. We saw some crazy kill streaks that did not turn into a lot of points because people could not capitalize on them. They got themselves killed getting those streaks and were not able to pick up the crests. And so it really seemed like it didn't reward solo play the way that some Slayer games do. I don't know, does that match what your guys' impressions of the game were as you played it? Or is there a difference?
It does. When I jumped in Supremacy today, I noticed that for the most part, randoms, blueberries, your solo teammates, do a very, very good job of sticking together throughout the matches. I think it took maybe... It was easy to tell when people were new to the game mode because they wouldn't stick with the group, but it took a game or two at the most, and then everybody is sort of moving as a pack throughout the rest.
Interesting that you used that word pack, given the expansion. I wonder if Bungie had that in mind when they put the game together.
I don't know, but it definitely does reward that type of gameplay. Like, you'll notice that, and it's funny because you'd never see this in any other game types, but the randies bunch up and they actually help each other, and it's an amazing thing to see because normally, you know, randoms are all over the map doing whatever it is that they please. And to see four kids who are not in a party and who aren't communicating with each other at all, you know, running in a group next to each other, team shouting someone, was actually pretty cool. So I gotta say, when I watched the MLG stream, I was impressed by the level of gameplay and by the commentary too. I think MTash did a really great job.
Oh yeah.
Considering it was a live commentary, and that's gotta be really difficult to do.
Yeah, he did a fantastic job.
But I was not impressed by the weapon diversity at all. It was Grasp of Malak, hand cannon, and shotguns. And I think True Vanguard maybe was running a Plan C.
Yeah, he was running Plan C.
He always bucks the meta, and that's what he wants to do. But it wasn't necessarily helping his team that he was running a Plan C. You know, it added a little bit of variety to the mix, but in general, there was not a lot of variety. It was all the same guns, all the same techniques. There were a couple of people sniping, and I didn't see any success at all. And I just... That was one thing that I took away from, too. And I think a couple of people on Crucible Playbook did, like, a breakdown where they actually looked at the numbers. And something that I found surprising that I wouldn't have thought was there was actually a lot of primary kills in it, which is something that... You know, we talk about a special dominant meta, and I've said it myself that I think people use their special weapons too much. But at that really high level, there were a lot of primary kills too, especially with the hand cannons. Those guys are good with the hand cannons. That vertical mobility we talk about with hand cannons was very much on display.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're taking angles that you would never guess somebody would be coming at you from. And they're so fast when they do it too. It was very, very impressive gameplay. If anybody hasn't seen that stream and it's posted up somewhere, I highly recommend that you guys go and check it out.
Yeah.
It gave me some things to think about when I play and to try to mimic. Just in their movement around the map, how well they stick with teammates, how well they cover each other, things like that. It was really, really a very, very cool stream. And I'm looking forward to Destiny becoming the competitive game that I think a lot of us have wanted it to be for a long, long time. I'm looking forward to the Game Battles tournament that's upcoming very, very shortly. They don't honor sweat rules. They said that. So if anyone's thinking about that, you guys need to know They said that they are trying to come up with a rule variant set for Destiny by involving the sweaty community. But as of this tournament, they are not honoring sweat rules. So just for anyone who's going into it, just be aware of that. It'll be interesting to see how it turns out with basically a no holds barred version of the Crucible in a competitive setting. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested to see if we're going to see the dominance of the really high armor Titans and Warlocks that people have predicted that we will, or if we're going to see a little bit more variety than that.
Honestly, I think what's going to happen is this. I think the majority of people are going to play the way they always would play, regardless of what it is. I think a small subset of people is going to try to find the optimal, we can call it the cheapest way to win possible, and they're going to try to abuse that. And I think the higher level matches, the later matches in the brackets, are going to come down to people who are truly very, very good and people who are maybe not as good, but who are using the very best loadouts, like the Max Armor Titans, like the Triple Stormcaller, something like that. I think some of the matches are going to come down, and I'm really curious to see whether good players playing with whatever they want are going to be able to beat players who are, you know, maybe as good playing with things that are banned in sweaty matches, basically.
It'll definitely be a showdown to watch, and I'm looking forward to that weekend and seeing how it plays out. Cougar, I know you're planning on joining that tournament. If you haven't already signed up, what are you planning to take into it?
Really, as of right now, I don't know yet. That does fall on my birthday, so I'm actually trying to figure out if I can get in on it. I have obligations. I'm expected to see these people that call themselves my family. Apparently, I have a fiance, all this stuff, you know, so I may have to put the controller down.
That's fair. I've heard of people having families and fiancés. I know that's a thing out in the world.
Surprise the hell out of me.
That's what happens when you play too much Destiny.
Yeah, your guardian had no idea that you were married.
Yeah, so I may have to jump in on the next tournament instead. I guess next week I'll update anybody who cares.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing how it goes. I'm definitely not tournament ready myself, but I know we've been talking about it in my clan. We've been talking about putting together a tournament team and putting together kind of a people who would like to be able to play in tournaments and not get just completely wrecked. Team, which I'm looking to be a part of, to just kind of learn and get better and improve in that gunplay. So a lot of exciting things.
To jump in real quick, don't worry about your gunplay. For any level of competitive play, what you need to focus on, and this is something that anybody listening to this podcast, if you want to get into the competitive player versus player scene, your gunplay doesn't matter yet. What you have to go over is your basic skills. Your movement, knowing when to engage, when to fall back, knowing where your teammates are, when your grenade's going to be up, when the other guy's grenade's going to be up. You have to focus on all of your basic skills until they become muscle memory. These top-tier guys that are playing in the sweats, that are playing in the tournaments, I've watched these guys go on autopilot and steamroll high-level trials players. It comes down, in the end, to the mastery of the basics. Whoever has a better grasp, both theoretical and practical, of the basic skills is going to win 99% of the time.
Wow, That's a really good insight, and really good info, both for me and other people who are working on getting better. Something to really take to heart and keep in mind that it's not all Twitch reflexes and gun skill, that there's a lot more going on in Destiny.
Yeah, I obviously have a friend I've talked about him before who's basically just started playing, and I think he's now going on a couple of months that he's been playing the game. And since he only plays basically at my place, he doesn't have his own Xbox One, I get to watch his progression as a player. And one of the things I told him early on was, don't worry about how well you shoot. That stuff comes with time as you play. Worry about learning the maps. Worry about learning when to disengage. Worry about learning how to use special ammo, how to use heavy ammo, how to use your teammates. You know, I was like, you die so often in this game because you're going to lose a gun battle and you have a shot to run away. Destiny is such a movement-based game. You could retreat and survive, but you stay in the gun battle and for what? Hoping that the other guy misses three or four shots and you pick up a lucky kill? Don't do it, because at higher levels, they're not going to miss three or four shots. They're going to kill you. If you're entering a losing battle, that's a mistake on its own. But if you are about to lose a battle, disengage, run away, leave. There's no shame in retreating in Destiny. In fact, it's something a lot of good players do, and it keeps them alive longer. And people say, well, you know, oh, if you're running away all the time, you're not going to get that many kills. You will. You'll get more kills than if you're dying all the time, waiting on your revive timer, waiting on your respawn timer, and then having to run back to wherever the battle is every single time. And you'll notice a progression where you start dying less, and then your kills start going up. You know, so it's definitely that and map movement, understanding the maps, understanding what areas to control, understanding the choke points. Those things are really, really big things. And those things are more important than gun skill. Like you said, when you're really learning how to play, when you're trying to make improvements.
Yeah, absolutely agreed. And that's a big point. The less you die, the fewer points you give to the other team, which means the more chances you have to win. A lot of people, I see the word scrub thrown around a lot when it comes to Crucible. And if somebody is calling you a scrub because you did something that pissed them off, keep doing it, whatever you did, because it was probably the right thing to do.
Yep. Like people out there say you're a scrub lord because you use a shotgun or, you know, whatever the most annoying strategy is in the meta, universal remote with no backup plans or universal remote juggernaut Titan, whatever it is that's really annoying, it's annoying because it works. If you suck at doing something, no one's going to be calling you a scrub because you're not going to kill them. So they're not even going to notice you. They're just going to steamroll past you. People notice you when you're pissing them off, and you're pissing them off because you're beating them. You know? So whatever it is that people, these things are in the game for a reason. And, you know, average Crucible that most of us are playing in does not have rules that are set up like Sweaty's. You use whatever exotic armor you want. You use whatever weapons you want. You use luck in the chamber on an ill will and go around two-tapping people. You know, you don't need to worry about things that are cheap and things that aren't. But, I mean, that's just what I think. That's just what I think about.
Yeah, this is a lot of good stuff. Probably something that we could build a whole episode on. I think though we probably want to go ahead and circle back. You know, anybody really interested in Crucible, take some notes, listen to that part again. These guys know what they're talking about. You know, I play with Cougar sometimes. Wish I could play with Mercules. Still haven't figured out how to hack the cross-platform thing. You know, but I can tell you as somebody who's fairly average skill, that they know what they're talking about and that there's a lot to learn there. So take that to heart. And let's circle back now to Rise of Iron. We kind of got off on a good topic, a good tangent, but tangent nonetheless. So we've got a little bit of time left here, I think, before we want to call it quits and get back into the game. Any final SGA that you guys have? I have a couple of pieces of SGA I want to share. That's super good advice for anybody who somehow doesn't know that yet. It's super good advice. Any tips you guys have for Rise of Iron at this point?
I've got a twofold one. First is the Sepix Perfected Strike, which is the Devil's Lair from House or Vanilla, I think, actually, Destiny. You have a chance to get a strike exclusive sniper rifle that is guaranteed to have either quick draw or snapshot, or quick draw and snapshot. I'm not sure if it's both or one or the other. It's guaranteed to have that. It is the Ephrodite's archetype, meaning it can still kill supers with one headshot, high armor guardians with one headshot in their super. The second part of that is that there is also a class item, a Warlock Bond, that is in the Strike exclusive table, so don't be surprised if you do what I did, and use your little treasure chest key thingy, fully expecting to get a sniper rifle, only to realize that there's a class item. Don't be surprised if it happens.
Yeah, and that would be heartbreaking, because I was actually planning on doing that later. I got my first skeleton key, and I was going to go try to grab that sniper, because stat-wise, it is very, very good. Scope-wise, it is very, very good. I was hoping to get a good roll, but now I'll prepare myself for the heartbreak that comes when a class item drops for me instead. So, oh well.
It's rough.
I don't think I really have an SGA to say. I have basically just been enjoying the game. I've been logging in, having fun with the quest and discovering things, and the only SGA I'd say is enjoy the game, have fun, play it at your pace, don't worry about it, don't try to burn through everything in the very first day or the very first week, and you know, just take your time and have fun. I think that's probably my best SGA I've got.
So one note that I had that I really picked up, I think it's maybe a good warning if you haven't already dug into the game. If you've already been digging into it, you've probably run into this. But there is a bit of a light level, I don't know what you want to call it, obstacle, stop sign, challenge right around 350, where legendary engrams start decrypting only with a 50-50 chance of actually being higher light, and it sounds like a lot of them are decrypting at 351, making it very difficult to get past that little valley of Rahul Rage, I guess you want to say. Sounds like once you get everything to 351, once you actually get your overall light level to 351, that stops being an issue. Have you guys run into that?
I have not. I have noticed a lot of stuff sitting right around like 340. But no, I hadn't noticed that. I'll keep an eye out for it and see if it ends up happening. It seems like based off Reddit's response, it is definitely something that's been noticeable. So I'm sure once I hit it, I'll see it too.
So this was actually answered by Cosmo from Bungie. This is only for Cryptarch legendary engrams, but once you hit 350 light, you're going to have a 50% chance to get +1 light items. You'll reliably get higher light level items from actual activities, but your legendary engrams will only be 1 light above your current level, it seems.
Yeah, well, I did a little bit of research into it. What I was able to find is it sounds like strike exclusives, exotic engrams, exotics in general, and what was the other? There was one other. Oh, faction
Archon's Forge.
Faction packages, it sounds like, also still drop high. And Archon's Forge, that's right, can still drop higher. So those are kind of the activities to focus on when you get to that point. The long and short of it is there are ways to break past that barrier, but Rahul and company are still jerks, and that will never change.
Yep, sounds about right.
One other...
It's comforting to have something that's a constant.
Yeah, it's nice to have that familiar target for your salt. That, I think, was really the only thing I wanted to make sure people got a heads up on. I don't want to talk about anything that might be spoilery. I haven't dug into most of it, but unfortunately, as a consequence of writing for Planet Destiny, I know a few spoilery things that I'm just going to not talk about.
Probably the best idea.
Yeah, so I think that's a wrap for me. Great podcast, guys.
Yeah, that's basically everything I want to talk about. We'll be back next week and hopefully talk a lot more about Rise of Iron and be able to talk about some of the stuff that we skipped over today.
Yeah, one final note I want to make sure I mention. Take a look on Twitch for Kit Kutch. I'm going to be streaming the raid on Friday. As soon as it launches, hopefully it launches on time, but I don't have anywhere else to be, so I'm going to be sitting there waiting. We'll be streaming that live for hopefully as long as it takes, which I'm hoping is not going to be insanely long, but come by, say hi, cheer us on, give us a tip if you have one. We're going in blind, so it's going to be fun.
On the subject of Twitch, on September the 30th, our right, is it the 30th?
I think it's the 30th.
Whatever the first day of trials starting with that, I will be streaming trials carries with a friend of mine. My Twitch is NKCougar94, so feel free to jump in that stream, enter the raffle to get a run. I'll be doing it probably all day, every day throughout the trials weekend.
Awesome.
I will not be on Twitch, so I don't do that. Oh wait, maybe I will be. I actually have a Twitch account. I don't ever use it, but maybe I'll use it just for fun now because you guys are on it too.
Yeah.
But at the very least, my YouTube channel has been relatively active recently. I've posted several videos, been lucky enough to be featured on Planet Destiny and in a few of their articles. So I'm gonna keep going with that. I'm gonna try to do a high impact sniper rifle review or something like that in the upcoming days.
Yeah, Mercules, you're tearing it up with the reviews and the breakdowns, man. I love it.
I'm doing my best. All 800 of my subscribers, almost 600 of whom are probably students of mine that I had from when I was a middle school teacher. But the 200 of you who've come over from Reddit and Planet Destiny, I really appreciate you guys.
All right. Well, thanks as always for tuning in, guys. I've got nothing else. You guys, any final sign-offs?
So I'll say happy Rise of Iron Day, I guess.
Yeah, happy Rise of Iron.
Happy Arms Day.